This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball game is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Sauce after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Let's go to the phone lines, 877-377-6963. Danny is in Russellville. What's going on, Danny?
Good morning, guys. I really wish we could get Reggie Chaney straightened out. Well, you know, he's 6'7". He's a good rebounder, good shot blocker. And if we could get a rebound, because these teams, the blueprint is drive to the bucket, put it up, crash the boards, get the rebound, put it up again. If we could get the rebound, we could get some runouts and some cheap baskets. And I'd just like to get my beef in here. I don't have a phone contract. I have a phone card. Because really, hardly anybody ever calls me anyway. My kids call. They're wanting something. So I go the cheap route. And they somewhere along the line, they slapped a 10% tax on those things to go on top of the 9% tax in Russellville. So that's 19% tax on a phone card. And I think, where did that come from? Snuck up on me. But
who's taxed? The state? Or who put a 10%?
I'm trying to find out. I heard it was a state. I'm trying to find out, and I'm thinking, I'm paying 19% tax on a phone card. Why should I do that?
I'm telling you, if any of us ever looked at our utility bills, and really examine all the franchise fees, state tax, county tax, you know, because we want to tax. It's amazing how much of your utility bills, phone bills like you're talking about, and just your electric bills are chock full of these fees. What's your taxes?
Yeah, it's a long list of little taxes.
You're right. Yeah, pay attention.
I'm going to ask you guys a question. Do you think, okay, the second signing period's coming up, the Hogs got a lot of players coming in the next few weeks, 4 stars, 5 stars, 3 stars, et cetera. Maybe a quarterback or two transfer. Do you think, don't you guys get the feeling that we're going to salvage this recruiting class and it's going to be pretty amazing by the time it's all said and done? I trust these coaches. I do. I just think we've got the right fit of everything, and things are on an upward trend, guys. And thanks a lot, and have a good day.
Hey, appreciate it, Danny. As far as your question about the uptick of recruiting class, I mean, I want to believe that. There's just no direct indication to say that, you know, this is why it's going to be able to finish in the 30s. Because let's be honest. That's what, best case scenario, unless some just sort of miracle happens. The best case scenario for Arkansas recruiting class in 2020 in football is to finish in the 30s, which would take a lot to do.
Yeah.
But I still think you can still get some good players out of it, and I still think that you can hit the transfer market. Obviously, with the quarterback situation, that's what they're wanting to do, is go the grad transfer route. It's just really tough for me to believe that, given the circumstances and given the situation, that Arkansas is just going to come in and be able to get a top 25 recruiting class. Right? And it's no fault of anybody, but of pretty much always just shift the blame to Chad Morris in that.
Yep.
So that's whose fault.
So big weekend for recruiting, because if you are going to try to get as many official visits here and as many people on campus to show them what it's all about, wouldn't the Arkansas-Kentucky game be the game that, if you're Sam Pittman, I want as many of these 2020, 2021 guys as I can get to come experience what's going on here.
Yep.
Officials, unofficials, all of that stuff. So that to me is why this weekend is the one you circle. And I always look, you know, you used to, when it was all about February and you didn't have an early signing period, you'd always look for the biggest basketball weekends to see who you're going to get to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is without question the biggest basketball season, or biggest basketball weekend of the season, and it's before the official national signing day. It's easy to get lost in the fact that this is signing day. We just had an early signing period, which has become the de facto signing day now.
Right. But it's perfect timing.
But for this year, this 1 year for Arkansas, this one's more important.
Mm-hmm.
It just is.
Yeah. And, you know, this could have the feel. I know it's not going to be the exact same, but if you remember that Michigan basketball game in 2012, where it was just a packed out house on a Saturday and all the recruits came in and the place was going nuts and you had some big names like a guy like Dorial Green Beckham was there. I mean, it could be that type of weekend where it really wows a lot of these recruits that you're trying to get. And Sam Pittman, I know, is going to utilize that and try to take advantage of that because, yeah, listen, that can make a huge, huge impact to have an atmosphere like that, to have the fans that are going crazy like that. It can make an impression. So, yeah, this is the weekend to do it, and it's perfect timing for Arkansas and Sam Pittman. We'll see if they actually are able to get some of these guys, and one of them being a big quarterback in Felipe Franks. Let's go back to the phone lines. Miss Lisa is on the phone. What's going on, Miss Lisa?
Well, it's What's My Beef Wednesday, and a little advice to Danny. There's an empty house down the road from me that I think I'm moving my son-in-law into. But anyway, if I don't, he can drop his phone bill, move to light, and use peach cans and string. It works pretty good for us.
The old intercom system. So.
Yes. Yeah. Now, here's my beef. First of all, I can't sleep. Starting about 2 o'clock in the morning, my phone beeps so much it falls off the nightstand.
Turn it off.
And no, I can't do that. I've got too many irons in the fire out here, Tommy. I can't do that. All right. I'm waiting. You know, Hunter could call me or someone.
Well, you have a good point, you know. Sam or Hunter or Eric, any of them could be calling at any moment. You're right.
Well, as long as it's not that woman up there that answers the phone, I'll be fine with that. Okay, and I would give her name, but I told them I'd try to be nice to her from here on out. Mm. Her initials are L, let's see, L-B, L-B.
Well, so at least we're keeping it anonymous. Yeah,
very subtle. Yeah.
Okay, but we're going to remain anonymous on that. Me and her almost went to Fifth City. But anyway, that was a few years back. And she said some. I've still got it on my telephone, so she couldn't deny it when I played it to John Fagg. I'll leave it at that. Mm. Okay, what's the deal with the Arkansas referees and Scotty Thurman? That's my beef.
Yeah, Tommy. Oh,
I don't know. What are you talking about?
Well, I get
you were mad.
A text.
Now, you called in here a week ago. He received a technical foul over Christmas or whatever, and you were all hot about that. So I don't know what you're talking about. What's happened?
Yeah, you do, too. He had to pick up his team and leave the game last night. He got one technical, and he's fixing to get another, so he just got the team up and I think left the game early with 2 minutes and some odd to go.
Why'd he get a technical?
And Matt, I don't know, but Matt, my son-in-law, I think I'm fixing to cut the purse strings there, but don't tell him. He's probably listening.
Yeah.
But he sends me a smart aleck text this morning, and I'll forward it to you. Look what the great Scotty did last night. Well, first of all, the great Scotty is the great Scotty. And I want to know where was Parkview playing last night?
Sylvan Hills,
I'm
told.
That's what I want to know.
I looked it up. Sylvan Hills.
Sylvan Hills, that's right, where Zimmerman used to be, correct?
I don't believe
that. I don't know, honestly.
No, he was at Dardanelle.
Just roll with it. In Sylvan Hills in North Little Rock.
John?
Why are you asking me? You're the one that's ref these games.
I've never been to Sylvan Hills. I'm sorry.
Let's just assume whatever you're saying is correct.
You need to get out more often.
Yeah.
John, let's me and you have this discussion. Tommy don't even know where he's at this morning.
Well,
I'm all ears.
What in the world are they doing to provoke him? To make him grab up his toys and say, let's get up and get out of here. And go home. They're fixing to throw me out. I mean, you know, I have to take the brunt of the phone calls over here in Northeast Arkansas or the text. I haven't had any phone calls yet, but I'm sure I'll get a few. But I know referees have a job to do, and I'm for referees, believe it or not. I mean, my husband went over to a ball game last night. I don't know who. Oh, Mark Carden was one of the referees. he told me. I stayed home and watched Clemson beat Kentucky. And, no. Clemson beat Duke. Let me rephrase that. And, but anyway, back to Scotty Thurman. I don't know what the referees in Arkansas have against Scotty Thurman. That's my beef.
It's a mystery to all of us. It's a mystery to all of us.
Well, figure it out and text around and talk about it. And with that, I'll hang up and thank you for taking my call.
Okay, thank Miss Lisa. I had to look up this story that she was referring to, and I was checking it out. So, yeah, I guess he did take the team off the court.
Yeah, with 2:25 left in the game.
Yeah, and
just removed his team from the floor.
Yeah, and he said,
never seen that. 18 years of being out there, never seen that happen.
And Scotty had a quote, according to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Sylvan Hills is in Sherwood.
There you go. He says, quote, "My kids get a disservice each and every night. Everybody's all braggadocious about a former Razorback being coach at Parkview, and I get shafted every night. My kids play hard. They play the right way. We get shafted every night. It doesn't matter who the officiating crew is. It's never equal, and it shouldn't be that way."
What do you want me to say?
Tommy, this is your wheelhouse.
Well, that's his opinion.
I
haven't worked one of his games. I'm not scheduled to work one of his games. I don't have an opinion.
I just didn't know if you maybe had some sort of inside information. Listen, but I will say this real quick. Parkview it was called for 25 fouls, Sylvan Hill only 21. So discrepancy was
25-21. Wow.
The discrepancy wasn't that
big. One of those was a technical, you know.
I just wanted your opinion on the matter is all.
I think most coaches feel like I think most coaches in most situations just feel that way regardless. And it's just the way it's human nature. When's the last time anyone left a ball game, particularly at the prep level, and said, "Boy, that was great officiating tonight." Of course, other than the games I'm at. Mm. But
of course.
I mean, it's just who we are as sports fans. You know, we think the SEC officials are the worst ever.
They do suck.
Boy, they suck. And then you watch some of these Pac-12 crews working, you're like, "Oh, my Lord."
Can always be worse.
Big 12 crews, you're like, "Oh, my Lord." We realize, you know, that now we just think they all suck, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All the NFL officials, they're terrible. You know, the NBA, they're terrible. You know. Well, they're in these games for a reason. They don't pay them thousands upon thousands of dollars. Now, again, high school officials make tens of dollars, not hundreds in a lot of cases, not thousands certainly. You're not going to attain perfection for $95 in two ball games or $110 in two ball. You're not going to attain perfection. Everybody wants perfection. And, hey, be perfect and then improve from there. We want you to be perfect and then get better. Not going to happen.
Mm.
I don't know what, I have no comment about what he's saying. I don't know. I hadn't seen him, don't know, hadn't been involved in that.
So there you go, Miss Lisa. There's your inside information. If we find out anything more on the situation, if we have any more people texting in and giving us some more info, we will be sure to relay it to you. So, but she is fired up about Scotty Thurman not getting treated unfairly in those games. So we've had a few people texting in, though, and a lot of people are really interested in this quarterback situation for Arkansas football. And the transfers that, of course, like Felipe Franks taking an official visit this weekend. People are interested about De'Eric King. And this one actually comes from Ty in Huntsville. He says, "Are we about to repeat the transfer portal quarterback debacle from last year where De'Eric King sounds like a Ben Hicks to me and Felipe Franks seems like a Nick Starkle without the Bieber shirt? I know we're not in a position to be picky, but we may not have a shot at either of them." First off, the comparisons of De'Eric King to Ben Hicks and Felipe Franks to Nick Starkle are completely and totally unfair. I think that both of these quarterbacks, if either of them decide to come to Arkansas, would be an upgrade. You need help in that quarterback room. You need some added depth. And whether it is going through the recruiting rounds or going through the transfers, you got to have some people. And
you just got to have enough to have a practice right now.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You just got to have people.
Just to get in practice.
And to me, if say Felipe Franks decided to come to Arkansas, what's the harm in having a kid who, say what you want about his game and whatnot, but a kid who's played in the SEC, who's won some SEC games, and the coaching staff is interested in his services? Why would you not want him to be your quarterback. He's 6'6". He's 227. Now, I know some people didn't necessarily like the attitude, and especially the way he handled himself in that Florida-Miami game at the beginning of the season. That's neither here nor there. I know that there's going to be people that bring that up. And I know that he went through that season-ending injury this year, so he didn't have a full year. Maybe the injury is something that people are bringing up, and that may be a bad impact. But if you look at 2018, he completed nearly 60% of his passes, threw for 2,500 yards, 24 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and he played to Florida in the SEC. If you got him, I don't understand why you wouldn't think that is a positive. Like, because you have to get quarterbacks. You as much, because this is where it came into play yesterday, and I don't understand it. Because you add somebody like a Felipe Franks or De'Aaron King or whatever, that's not saying that you've completely given up on KJ Jefferson. I don't know where that mentality has come from.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't
mean
that.
The same thing, when Starkle came in, you'd already brought in Ben Hicks.
Yeah.
Everybody thought you'd given up on all these guys. Here, even about one question with Franks, and we know we referenced the injury earlier in the Kentucky game where you had a pretty bad injury.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd also go back to, is Dan Mullen the best quarterback coach in this conference?
I mean, I can't think of anybody that's for sure better. No, yeah.
I mean, so if he's not the best, he's amongst the top three.
I'd agree with that.
Now, everybody wants to play. I don't want to play now. I don't want to play yesterday. I want to play right now. And there's only, it's not like offensive line. Well, if you can't play left tackle, we might let you play right tackle. You know, or we'll find another spot on that unit for mm-hmm. you. Well, that doesn't really work at quarterback. But I would think playing for Dan Mullen would have to be something that would be very attractive to any quarterback just based on who he's coached, how they've developed, and his track record with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You're walking away from, I've been wrong about Dan Mullen. I'll be the first to admit it. But this dude can coach quarterbacks. He is a quarterback whisperer, no question. So walking away from that as a quarterback makes you also wonder, kind of where's their head on some things.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I'm interested to see if there's more to this story. If there's more to, is it like a internal problem? Is it? And I'm not trying to assume anything. I'm just curious.
We just don't know.
Yeah, we just don't know. And hopefully that these things will come out. But I'm just telling you, the fact that he's taking an official visit obviously shows that there is interest on this side from Arkansas.
Absolutely.
He wouldn't be taking an official visit if there wasn't. So I'm going to trust Kendall Briles and mm-hmm. Sam Pittman and that offensive staff that if he decided to come to Arkansas, he can add something. I don't think they're just doing it just to do it. I think that there has to be something there. And the absolute weird comment that was made by Ty, and I'm not trying to call you out, man, but saying that trying to compare maybe De'Aaron King to Ben Hicks is not even the same thing. Who was after Ben Hicks? Who in college football was vying for Ben Hicks to get his transfer services? No one.
Nobody.
Do you know who's coming after De'Aaron King? Teams like Oklahoma, teams like LSU, teams that are like big time, two of them being in the college football playoffs. They're going after his services. Mm-hmm. So there's not even a comparison there. He's a game-breaking type of quarterback. And we don't know exactly the interest level that De'Aaron King has. We know the connection that he has with Kendall Briles, that his best year as a quarterback on that offense was when he had Kendall Briles on there.
The only comparison is the connection to a coach on your staff.
Right, exactly. And honestly, I'm not.
He's not coming from SMU.
No. He's coming from Houston. Yeah. He's coming from Houston, and this is not going
to Houston
this,
much better than SMU is the point.
And this is going to sound harsh, and I don't mean it to. Actually, I do mean it to. But if I'm De'Aaron King, I'm not coming to Arkansas. I mean, if I have these other big time programs that's looking at me, if I got an Oklahoma, if I got an LSU, if I got all that, and this is my final year, I just don't know if I'm going to go to a program like Arkansas. I'm not saying he won't, but I feel like somebody like a Felipe Franks may be a little more realistic. Because the last thing you want to do with the De'Aaron King situation is find yourself similar, Tommy, to what you were with Kelly Bryant.
True.
Where you thought that this, hey, the connections were there, the lock is there, it all makes sense.
God almighty. Was there anyone more overhyped? Was that the biggest bust? As far as this free agency world we're living in college football with the transfer portal, was Kelly Bryant, I mean, there's no other way to describe Kelly Bryant than a bust, right?
Mm-hmm.
in that regards.
Yeah. I mean, he made the right decision not coming to Arkansas, though. He did do
and
that.
I'm not saying he wouldn't have improved Arkansas, but, I mean, not doesn't take much to improve Arkansas' situation.
Yeah.
But this guy was going to be a Heisman candidate wherever he landed, if you know, if you believed all the recruiting, basically recruiting hype mm-hmm. during his tour around college football as he was trying to figure out where he was going to land.
It was Arkansas, Auburn, Mississippi State, Missouri. I mean, it was all SEC teams that he was looking at. And decided to go to Missouri, ended up with only 2,200 yards passing, 15 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, which I agree, he would have improved Arkansas, but... If you're
that's more of a comment about Arkansas.
Right, exactly. I mean, it has nothing to do with him himself. But the point is you don't want to get in a situation to where you get all hyped up and all hoped up that this is going to happen with Derek King because of the connection. And then when the rug gets pulled out from under you, you know, then you got to settle. I talked to a guy that covers college football for ESPN.com yesterday, and he told me that if he's Arkansas, go all in on Derek King. Felipe Franks would be fine. But go all in on De'Aaron King because he has that type of game-breaking ability that can he can improve any team because he can play any position. He's not just a great quarterback; he's a great athlete.
You want to kind the kind of quarterback that can pull off the kind of offense you want to be long term. You know, Musselman this year in year one in basketball, is this what it's going to look like in two more years? Is this what Arkansas basketball is going to look like long term? I don't think so.
No.
My point is Pittman, first year, is going to be forced to do some things that aren't really what he wants it to be. But you only get 12 games. You only get so many chances to display your product to future recruits. The closer you can get formation and personnel-wise, game in, game out to what you want to be long-term, the health of your program's better off.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only build around the personnel you actually have. That's one of the problems we've seen with previous coaches, Morris and Bielema both, that... Well, we're going to jam this square peg in this round hole. Well, no, you're not. Not in this league. Not very well. So the less you can be square peg round hole and find the right quarterback to do it all, better off you're going to be.
Yep. And again, it comes down to, do you trust Sam Pittman? Do you trust Kendall Briles? Do you trust this staff? You have to. At least you got to give them the benefit of the doubt as of right now. And if they think that adding one of these guys in is going to help the team, then you better believe it's going to help.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
What is a Wednesday, folks? And we know that on Wednesdays, we like to use it to voice our whinings and complainings and all of that and everything that has been bothering us.
Things that are angering us.
Yeah, things that we need to vent about. And what's great about it is we allow that to happen for you, too, on this platform. So if you have anything or anyone that you're beefing with today, you can call or text into the Morning Rush at 877-377-6963.
Already had several in the first hour. So here's your chance in hour two.
Yes, and you know, Miss Lisa, we could probably just use her to have What's Your Beef Wednesday all the time, it seems like. So, but without further ado, let's jump right into What's Your Beef Wednesday.
What is wrong with you?
Okay, I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain about
complaining.
I want to complain.
It really pisses me off today.
To simply listen to people whine and complain.
I'm angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger. Swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm complaining because not enough people tickle, hug, or smile.
I'm so mad I could eat ball bearings and crap BBs.
It's time for What's Your Beef Wednesday.
All right, I'll go ahead and kick us off on What's Your Beef Wednesday. What I'm beefing with, or who I'm beefing with, is Odell Beckham Jr. Now, Odell Beckham Jr., OBJ, depending on if you know him well enough or not, is a phenomenal wide receiver. I mean, some of the plays that he has made in his career at the NFL level is just it's just incredible. And the fact that he's at Cleveland, he's always struggled with it a little bit. This year was not great. There's a lot of drama there and all that, but still does not take away from the fact that he's just that type of phenomenal receiver. Well, he went to LSU in college. People don't remember that. Which he was a great receiver then, but I don't think anybody expected him to become what he did in the NFL. Well, since he went to LSU, of course, he goes to the LSU Clemson National Championship game.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah. And he is, of course, Odell Beckham Jr., so he has a little more access, gets to go on the field, gets to have all that fun stuff. Well, what happened yesterday, what came out yesterday, was a video of OBJ with particular LSU players. He takes his wallet out, has a bunch of cash, looks like 50s, 100s, whatever, a lot of cash, mm-hmm. and goes over to an LSU player, shakes his hand with that cash in his hand, lets the LSU player take that cash, and the LSU player walks off, and he does that. Apparently, he did that to several LSU players, of giving them just tons of cash.
Straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, homie, from OBJ. Now, as we know, a lot of those players, in fact, the majority of them still are having another year of eligibility and whatnot, but they're also still student-athletes.
This occurred during the game, right?
After the celebration, yeah. Right. And they are still part of the NCAA and part of the LSU institution.
This appears to be a violation.
It appears to be. So there's two folds on this beef. I'm beefing with OBJ because what that tells me is that OBJ wanted that to be about OBJ. He wanted to make sure that there was a camera on him. He wanted to make sure that out in front of everybody, he took his wallet out or took his cash out, folded it out, and did it in front. He wanted to make sure that it was seen. And wanted to make sure it was about OBJ.
This is like rule one. I mean, yeah. In the NCAA book, rule number one, don't give cash to players.
Yeah.
That's like rule one, you know?
Yeah, and if you're going to do it, don't do it with the subtlety of a baboon when you're out there like saying, look at me, I'm handing out cash to LSU football players on the field.
Rule 1A, don't do it on camera.
Yeah. So I'm beefing with that because OBJ likes to make it all about himself, and he always has, and it's just another indication of that, and I thought it was just very immature of him to do something like that. But the second part of my beef in all of this was the response by LSU, because you know what LSU told everybody when it started going viral and everyone's like, oh, NCAA is going to come in. LSU says, guys, please. It's okay. It was fake money. That was their response. Because Tommy, I don't know if you knew this, OBJ carries around a lot of fake money. And he just wants to hand out fake money to LSU players just because he can.
So it's counterfeiting.
Yeah. I don't know what's more insulting. That OBJ would do that right in front of the cameras and right in front of everybody to know that it's going to be a problem.
These didn't look like fake bills, though.
They did not. Or the fact that LSU thinks we're all stupid enough to think that was just fake money.
You know who is probably stupid enough to believe that?
Who?
The NCAA.
You think the NCAA is going to think that?
Okay. Who is the president of the NCAA?
Mark Emmert, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where'd he work before he went to the NCAA?
At LSU?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you think they'll just turn a blind eye and not even have a statement about it?
I'll tell you what. Mark Emmert will lift the rug while Ed Orgeron sweeps the dirt. That's how this deal's going to roll.
Unfortunately, I can't deny that. That sucks. But it's just stupid to me that, like, that's your first response is saying, hey, it's fake money. Come on.
Yeah, whatever, dude.
Yeah, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Don't do that. You know better. But I just thought it was dumb and on all accounts.
You think anything happens with this?
No.
The NCAA does?
No.
I mean, that's like rule one, right? Don't pay players.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give them.
Yeah.
And we've known about $100 handshake. Sounds like this a little more than $100 handshake.
Yeah. This is a wad. Wad of cash.
I mean, at least be a little more discreet.
Yeah, and how did he decide who to give it to? Like, what if he was, like, giving it to a walk-on or something like that, you know? Because I guarantee you didn't go to every player and hand him a wad of cash. So, I've never really been a huge fan of OBJ, but that to me is just, again, shows the immaturity that he has, but also shows the stupidity of LSU and thinking that, mm-hmm. you know, we're all stupid and thinking that was fake money. But yeah, it was just his Monopoly money. He was just carrying around all over the place. So anyways, that's my beef for today.
Remember, let's say his third quarter, the targeting foul, what was it, Sekalkis, or however you say the Clemson?
Sounds good to me.
It wasn't an intentional play, but by rule, the indicators were there because he used the crown of his helmet. This is a safety rule. It's a good rule, but does the punishment fit the crime? That's a big discussion right now. And I got some beef with the way this is being handled. You know, I always get accused of backing referees and all this stuff, generally because they're right. I just back what's right. They got the call right the other night. So there's no beef with the issue of what was called on the field. And I'm not to the point, John, where, well, we should have a different set of standards or judgments in a championship game versus a regular season. Rule book's a rule book. But is it time that, and I believe it's going to be addressed in the offseason. I believe there's going to become enough noise and enough people who have beef with this rule. Is the penalty for targeting correct as far as the severity of it compared to the crime? When you lose the rest of a game, or you lose the rest of this game and half of the next, does it fit the crime? Should there be a tier system with these targeting fouls now? NBA and college basketball has it where there's a flagrant one, a flagrant two. Could somehow you define that and deduce that to writing where the most, and we know it when we see it, the most obvious intentional flagrant targeting acts should have a more severe and stiff penalty of immediate ejection and maybe the loss of a game or two. But when you're trying to make a play, and players got to learn to keep their hat up, quit using the crown of your helmet to punish an opponent.
Right.
But I just hate to see, a critical player in the biggest game be disqualified, be ejected when it's probably a hustle play. Now, keep your head up, and that's one thing these players have to learn, but I'm not sure. I've got beef with the way that this rule is written.
Yeah.
And I think it's time to maybe look at different levels or tiers of punishment. Maybe he sits the rest or for kind of like in hockey, there's a penalty box.
Mm-hmm.
You get a targeting foul and it's a, well, just use the basketball term. It's a flagrant one targeting.
Yeah.
All right, you're going to miss the next 10 minutes of game action. That's a pretty steep penalty in that game.
Yeah.
Or you'll miss 12 minutes, something. That's 20% of the game. But to lose the rest of the game, and if this had not been the end of the season, I don't know, into the next game, seems severe in the percentage of season that you're losing compared to other sports.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that the rules makers, the stakeholders of the game in college football can maybe come to what I think would be a little more common sense approach with targeting. They've got to continue and stay the way on getting that out of the game. But, not all targeting fouls are the same. That one the other night in the championship game just isn't the same as a guy launching himself trying to hurt somebody. People that are trying to hurt somebody, get them out of there.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think...
I don't know. I don't know how you feel about it. I know people just... their blood boils when it... And this was a foul reviewed by the booth, initiated by the replay booth.
Mm.
These things happen so fast on the field, it's hard to catch a lot of times unless it's by replay. So, football's obviously a contact sport. Things are going to happen. But there's got to be a way. There's got to be a better way. Mm-hmm. There's just got to be a better way.
Yeah. I think intent is so important when it comes to stuff like this.
And that's
this.
Hard to judge sometimes.
It is, and I get. But you should at least be able to try to judge it.
But I think some of these most egregious violations where someone's launching themselves, lowering their head, trying to use their helmet as a weapon, they're pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
They call themselves.
No.
They stand out. That, to me, that wasn't even a call that stood out on the field. There wasn't even a flag on the field on that play. Only the replay booth detected it later, mm-hmm. stopped the game before the next snap, and then took the player off the field.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with taking the player off the field, but it shouldn't be necessarily always the rest of the game and then a penalty into the next game. There's got to be a better way that's not such a higher percentage of a season when you're talking about a 12-game season.
Yeah.
And you're talking about coaches in some cases, not this case with the championship game, but coaches whose jobs are on the line, and when the best player goes, that call, even though it may be correct, may end up leading to the dismissal of a coach down the road. Mm-hmm. You can go back, well, they'd won that game. We've seen it here at Arkansas. Well, if he only won one more game, he'd probably still be the coach. You could say that about Bielema. Don't know if you say about Morris, but another game or two, Morris still your coach. I can't tie a direct targeting foul to that, but with Bielema, there's a couple calls, couple things here and there in a couple of games that probably made a difference for him. It matters. Careers matter. Hundreds of people's lives matter in these things. So it's important.
I hate the rule. I have said how much I have hated
in
this rule.
In its entirety?
Well, just I understand the intent of it. It's just even when they announced that how they were going to handle the review of it and all of that, I just feel like it is way too black and white to where it is or it isn't, and it's too costly to be able to have it, because I think it's a complicated play. It's a complicated hit.
I think they have made it less complicated by saying, all right, these indicators have to be there. And crown of helmet is one of them, forcible contact. They've taken a lot of the judgment out of it. I don't think the rule is wrong. I don't think the rule is written improperly. I think the punishment that goes with the rule needs to be more equitable.
Well, and that's what I'm referring to. I'm not referring to the actual rule itself. Yes, I'm not referring to that.
Punishment or the penalty for the it's the penalty for the rule that needs review.
Yes,
not the rule. The rule's good.
Yes,
the penalty is bad.
Yeah, let me be specific on that. I believe that if you have a play like you did in the Clemson game, that should be something that needs to be a penalty of lesser stature than just getting ejected. Like something needs to be there to at least be able to protect that player protect that team from having just a simple play like that, a bang-bang play, a play where the intent was not there, and it costing that player. I mean, because we don't know, every situation's different, every game's different, but the last thing you ever want to do is to have a big-time player get ejected from a game in a national championship game, and it's his final game of the season. That's how he goes out because of one bad play. You got to be able to make some adjustments, not be so black and white in the penalty of it. It to where you can. There's flagrants, there's different punishment, severity is different. Like, you got to be able to work it out to where you're still having the integrity of the game there, the integrity of the players there, while also making sure you're protecting your players as well.
Imagine this. Okay, so you get ejected from a football game and you lose a game, right? You're going to be gone for half of this one and half of the next one, or what, you know, that's how it basically is written and works out. That's 8.3% of a college football season if you lose one of your 12 games, all right? Now, in basketball, if you lost 8.3% on a flagrant 2 foul, which you're ejected from that game, but you're not gone the next one, that'd be 2.6 games. So can you imagine if there was a penalty that you weren't suspended or ejected just from this one, but you were gone for over two and a half games in basketball? People would go crazy. Or in baseball, 8.3, maybe 4.6 games. That happens sometimes on these bench-clearing brawls, and they'll suspend somebody for 4 or 5 games.
But not for a flagrant, too, most cases.
Only the worst cases of a brawl, generally, or something. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, not just a play during a game.
Yeah.
That's my point. 8.3% of your season in football just seems too much for a play that didn't seem to be covered with a lot of intent to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
It is tackle football. It is a game at the end of the day. You've got to use your pads, your body, to stop an opponent. And some of these rules are meant to protect the defender as much as the offensive player. Players got to learn to quit using the crown of their helmet. I just don't like the penalty. And the other night, the national championship game was another example of that.
Yeah. No, that's a good beef, that's for sure. All right, Matty T, who are you or what are you beefing with today?
Well, you know, it's been a real foggy morning.
It has.
Today. And be careful, everybody out there. But I guess my beef is, I've noticed this the last few years, people with these super bright headlights, and they'll get right behind me, riding my ass in the morning, and it's like, I'm gonna drive off the road. Your lights are too bright. You know, it's like, I feel like I'm trapped in some kind of tractor beam. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like, people, it's like, hey, I'm happy to use my fog lights this morning. You know, it's like, but you're making it dangerous for everybody else out on the road. You know, it's more convenient for you, but now nobody else can see. So it's things like that. You know?
Yeah.
So I guess it's,
so people like me who use my fog lights.
Did you do that this morning?
I did.
Oh.
I was so proud.
Or also people that are like, when it's like icy out, it's like, I'm glad I've got 4-wheel drive. I can just zip right past everybody. Meanwhile,
like me.
my 05 Honda Civic is in a ditch now because some jackass, you know, had to go 80 miles an hour when it's icy outside.
You're getting carried away here this morning.
Oh, sorry.
No,
fired up.
I thought we were all passionate about it. This
you are, yeah. Clearly.
Well, I use my fog lights, but here's the thing. Like, where I drive from, I'm up so early in the morning that almost nobody's around. So I try to be as courteous that if I am somebody.
That you had done it. No,
yeah,
I was talking about all the other people.
But I get you, though. If there's other people that are out there that are doing those things, because, listen, there's people that will, like, I don't know where, because I can't tell anymore. Because you know what is the old adage, that if somebody has their brights on and they're driving towards you, you flash your brights at them to remind
but
them.
But these aren't even brights, though.
Yeah.
It's just like these standard headlights.
Yeah.
Now they're super duper bright, you know, and they're blinding. And you get somebody behind you and it's like reflecting in your rearview mirror right in your eyes. And
yeah. No, I mean, I've always felt like if people who have their brights on when you do the flash thing, it's like, hey, it's an indication, like, hey, turn off your brights. But I'm starting to think that some of these new lights that they get installed and whatnot, it's like, no, it's just extra bright.
These new LED.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it was this morning. I flick the, you know, to flash it. It's like, no, that's just their lights. They're that bright.
That's how it is. So.
It's like daylight now.
I know. Yeah. And it's, yeah, I totally get that because that's also something that's very frustrating, especially on a morning like this morning where it's already dangerous
enough
out there.
You already can't see, you know, 5 feet in front of you.
Yeah. I mean, you can't see it. Absolutely.
So be careful, everybody.
Actually, in the fog, high beams are worse than your low beams.
They are. Yeah. And that's why it's like, I have fog lights specifically. But if you have those, it's fine. But, yeah, don't use your brights in the fog. It makes it even worse on you. Do not do that.
What's Your Beef Wednesday brought to you by Crabtree RV in Alma. Their 70th anniversary is underway, and they're hosting the RV Boat and Outdoor Show at the end of the month. Travel trailers and fifth wheels, as well as bass, ski, and pontoon boats, all inside their 26,000-square-foot showroom. Golf carts, mowers, side-by-sides, four-wheelers, outdoor clothing and equipment, all there. Plus, they're going to be giving away a brand-new KZ Sportsman. Go to their Facebook page for all the details at Crabtree RV. Parking and admission is free. Put it on your calendar. The RV Boat and Outdoor Show at Crabtree RV in Alma, January 31st through February 8th at Crabtree RV, where your family's dreams come true.
And a few people that have been texting into the show on this What's Your Beef Wednesday, 877-377-6963. Mark in Jonesboro says his beef this morning is people who drive in the rain and in the fog with no headlights. Isn't that illegal?
It is.
Okay.
If you have to use your, in Arkansas, if you have to use your windshield wipers, you have to have your headlights on.
Yeah.
But all these new cars have daytime running lights anymore. I mean, just about every new vehicle does.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not totally sure either. Some people were really fired up too about, let's see, the targeting rule that you were talking about. Should also be mentioned in there.
Needs to be equitable. It's hard to disagree.
Yeah. Drew and Harrison says divided into unintentional and intentional targeting. But again, it's going to be difficult to try to.
Hard to define intent and reduce that to writing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I think you know. I mean, it's just like you know it when you see it.
Yeah. Because the game against with Clemson and LSU, you
at some
can tell
point
that
at the end, you got to trust people that you put in place to officiate these games to use judgment. Mm-hmm. That's why you hire any judge in a legal setting, an attorney, or a sports official to impose their judgment on the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Bradford and Van Buren also says, here's the thing, I understand the rule, but when it's the same 15 yards for an accidental targeting that it was on a play of a blindside block on that big play by Clemson, that's ridiculous.
Well, the 15 yards is not the problem. The problem is the player being removed from the game. It's, you know, again, I don't have a problem when they use the crown of the helmet being removed, but my point is the full four quarters, is a full game, which is the way, that, you know, is that equitable? The rest of this half, a lot of times it's four quarters. You're gone the rest of this game and part of the next game. It depends on, you know, the rule is if you're ejected in the first half, you're just gone that game. So I guess technically it could happen with 30 seconds to go in a half and you're done for the day. It doesn't carry over. But, you know, there's just got to be a better way to do it. Where I think it's just more equitable than potentially 8% of your season in football.
Yeah, because, listen, football, especially in college football especially, you don't have the same opportunities that you do to make up for those plays and to make up for those games.
These kids that are trying to get tape out for scouts and trying to elevate their draft status, I mean, listen, you can keep going on. But and in the end, you got to play by the rules. But I'm just saying punishment and crime need to fit each other. Foul and penalty need to be more equitable, in my opinion. It's not.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
And I think it will change.
And I think everybody who's college football fans in general will agree that it needs to change. You need to have something that is able to make this a better rule for those involved.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Arkansas continues SEC play tonight by taking on the Vanderbilt Commodores in Bud Walton Arena. Should be a great game between these two teams, and help us talk a little bit more about the Vanderbilt side of things. Let's welcome in Adam Sparks, who covers Vanderbilt for the Tennessean. Adam, appreciate you joining us, man. How you doing this morning?
Real good. Morning, guys. How are y'all doing?
We're doing really well as well, and we have been talking about this matchup, and You know, Vanderbilt's a team sitting at 8-7. They're 0-2 in conference play. Arkansas's got Kentucky coming up on Saturday. So Razorback fans certainly hope that they don't overlook Vanderbilt. But I want to start with just how this season has gone so far for the Commodores. Obviously, last year was historically bad for Vanderbilt. They made a coaching change, had Jerry Stackhouse now as the head coach of Vanderbilt. What was the expectation for this season from Commodores fans? And how do you feel like they fared so far, specifically in non-conference play?
They've been right around, I guess, where I think a lot of expectations were. Their schedule was set up to get easy wins early on, which was to break the 20-game losing streak that Bryce Drew finished his tenure with. So they had, you know, a lot of low majors and then a few mid-majors in there early on, got some easy wins. They ran into some mid-major teams in December. Maybe of the kind of the NIT caliber type teams, won a couple of those, lost most of them. So they've been competitive, but the season for Vandy fans, and I think the season for players, coaches, and all that kind of restarts tonight, and I'm not necessarily sure it's in a good way. They lost Aaron Neesmith, their projected first round draft pick. It's a deja vu. The other night, Jerry Stackhouse said maybe Memorial Gym is haunted. Last year they lost Darius Garland, who ended up being the number 5 pick in the draft. And this year, Aaron Neesmith leads the SEC in scoring, quite possibly the best 3-point shooter in the country. And he suffered a foot injury the other day, and he's likely done for the season. It's their best player gone. It's the one that kind of ran their offense, because they've been a shooting offense, a perimeter shooting offense, and they just lost their maybe the best perimeter shooter in the country. So everything's different now, and we don't really know how different it's going to be. But Jerry Stackhouse said the other day that in the Arkansas game, they're just going to change everything of what they were going to try to do offensively this season, because they don't have their best offensive player. We'll see what that looks like.
How does Arkansas present itself? When you're looking for the outside in, Arkansas's always talking about matchup problems, because Arkansas doesn't have, a big four or certainly even a five on this team. No back-to-the-basket type post player. And Musselman's kind of flipped that conversation around at times. What kind of matchup problem does Arkansas present from your perspective when you got four guards and it's at times five guards on the floor? What's the difficulty, in your opinion, that Arkansas brings to the table there from someone else's perspective?
Well, Vandy has struggled guarding the ball. That's pretty elementary, I guess. But because they're young, because they're inexperienced, they're having to put guys out on the floor to try to generate more offense, especially when Neesmith's gone. They've got, for example, Scottie Pippen Jr., is a starting point guard as a freshman. He's a double-digit scorer. He can shoot it a little bit. He can drive the ball offensively, but on the defensive side, he struggled to guard the ball. They've had to double up a lot of times. They use a lot of help defense, and they have even more with him. When you get late in games, teams have been able to drive on him, and I think Arkansas will try to do that. Vandy lacks size. Vandy just likes consistency in the backcourt. They've got sort of a defensive lineup. For example, Max Evans, you'll see more up tonight than maybe we saw the other night against Auburn. He's a guy that can cover a 2-3, maybe a small four. So I think that he'll be in play more tonight. Good defensive player. Doesn't give them as much offensively, so they'll try to go with more of a defensive line, a more defensive small lineup tonight because of the problems that Arkansas can give you. But again, guarding the ball, when you're trying to put guys that are not good defensively out on the floor because they can give you offense, it's going to create some problems. And Arkansas, I would suspect, is going to attack the rim quite a bit because of that.
That was interesting when Vanderbilt made the change and hired Jerry Stackhouse, which we know is a household name when it came to his playing, especially in his career. Had a very great career in the NBA. And I'm still just fascinated from the perspective from the Vanderbilt fans and the fan base there. What was the excitement level about Jerry Stackhouse? Do they feel like he can really take it on? What's the feeling of him as a head coach so far there in Nashville?
Yeah, it's name recognition, obviously. I think, first off, Vandy wanted any coach that could win games because of where the Bryce Drew era finished with that 20-game losing streak. And they want a guy that can develop players. I think one of the bigger issues last year is once Garland went down and Vandy got into SEC play, a lot of their players didn't get better as the season went on. And so they want somebody that could develop players. Jerry Stackhouse has an enormous staff. I don't know, it's like 11, 12 guys and ladies. It's an NBA staff. It looks like an NBA staff. It's made up a lot of every level, AAU, college, and pro experience. But there's quite a bit of NBA elements to it. A big staff, experienced staff, and they run it sort of more like an NBA program, I think, sometimes than they do a college team. People have been happy with what they've done in-game adjustment. I think there's some good parts of the development of the players. Jerry Stackhouse on the sideline, you know, as a player, I remember growing up watching him, and very intimidating player, very intense player. That's what he is on the sideline also. People don't know that he's kind of a funny guy off the court, but you don't see that. Tonight you'll see him stand in one place, arms crossed, and just look out on the floor for long periods of time without saying a whole lot, and then he'll pull a player over and talk to them slowly. You're going to see more of an NBA type coach, I think, from his demeanor on the sideline. He's not a guy that's jumping up and down and running around. It's more of the stand and watch, and then when you get a break, you bring a guy over and talk to him.
Adam Sparks with us here on the Morning Rush, talking about Arkansas Vanderbilt. I always like the quirky stat or the quirky note for a game. And one thing that Arkansas media and Arkansas fans pride themselves on is the fact that Arkansas has made a three-point basket in 1,026 consecutive games. Vanderbilt is second on that list, ahead of Arkansas, 1,078 consecutive games. So you got two programs that head this list that I'm not sure has what meaning, but Adam, what do you attribute these two programs to having such consistent, I guess, success shooting threes? Because it's kind of weird to have two programs that have made a three-point basket in over 1,000 consecutive games playing each other tonight.
Well, and that's funny. That's the list that Arkansas goes on. The list that Vandy promotes every game, the streak is what they call it. Vandy is one of, I think, three teams that has never not made a three-pointer in a game. So they played less than Arkansas during that stretch. But since the three-point shot came in, was it, I think, 86?
86, 87 season, yeah.
It's I think three teams that have never played a game without making at least one three-pointer. So just good three-point shooters. I mean, Arkansas's had them over the years. Vandy's had them over the years. Vandy, you can see it on Twitter. You can see it announced for home games. When Vandy makes its first three-pointer of a game, it's the same call every time the streak continues because they've never gone three-pointer less in a game. Just good perimeter shooters. I grew up watching some Arkansas basketball, and that there was a string of good ones. Vandy's always had some good ones. The issue for them tonight and moving forward the rest of the game is that their best one is done. And so instead of a perimeter three-point shooting team, the team that's led the SEC in three-point shooting most of the year, instead of that, you're going to see a team that's going to try to drive the ball and figure out a new way to win, because the old way is not there with Neesmith off the floor.
All right, let me ask you this, Adam, because I like to get a different perspective from what Arkansas looks like dealing with Eric Musselman as the new head coach of Arkansas. I mean, Razorback fans, I don't think, could be any more excited and ecstatic about what Eric Musselman has done, not only just with the wins and losses, but how he has just completely bought in the program. The recruiting's high. People are really thinking that he could take Arkansas to the next level. Just from your perspective, what do you make of Eric Musselman, and what do you know about him? And do you think that he can get Arkansas back to a level to where they were used to under Eddie Sutton and Nolan Richardson?
Yeah, I mean, he's a winner, obviously, and he had name recognition coming in. At Arkansas, I mean, there's a tradition of winning there, and I know every program like this, and I mean, just about every program kind of goes through highs and lows. It seemed to me the last few years the style was still at Arkansas that makes that an intimidating arena to go in and play, but there wasn't a there wasn't a season long intimidation of the Arkansas program. I remember back in Nolan Richardson days where you just didn't want to play them anywhere. I think the last few years you didn't want to play them at Bud Walton Arena, but on the road it was fine. The style was not going to overwhelm you. There was even a little bit of a talent drop off. I don't see that right now. I see a team that can score, which Arkansas has always been able to score. I've seen a team that's well built. I think a lot of times it doesn't even come down to talent. It comes down to direction, and it seems to be that Arkansas's got that right now. The record and the home record is always there, or the home record is always there. The overall record looks good right now. It's really just going to be determined what happens in February and March. Obviously, they're on the right track right now. The SEC is down a little bit this year, but still very competitive. I think most of the jury is out on Musselman for this year, but so far so good. I mean, you had to rank the teams in the SEC right now. Arkansas is right up there near the top, and for a guy coming in and taking over a program that had its own identity, you couldn't ask for a better start than that right now. I'll be curious to see how Arkansas goes down the stretch, and they get through okay tonight. I think is it Kentucky? Is it Saturday?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean that's the one I'm looking at, because Kentucky is a team that will be much better in March usually than it is in January because of its youth. Arkansas seems to be surging a little bit now, so that's a game that I'll be curious to see the result of, because if Arkansas can win that one, I think then you're starting to talk about a team that's gonna challenge for the league title.
So, speaking of the league, what's your view? I think we all agree probably Auburn's the best team to this point. If you had to rank 1 through 4 the most likely teams to end up in those top 4 seeds and have the best spot on the SEC tournament bracket, who do you like right now out of this 14-team league?
Oh, boy. I mean, I guess at this point it's more of teams that I don't like. Because I think there's a few that's already fallen out of favor. At the top, I don't know. Auburn, obviously, I think Auburn has some flaws. Every team right now in the SEC has some flaws, but Auburn is there, the winner of the Kentucky-Arkansas game. I think Arkansas is built pretty well right now of what they're going to be, and they're just improving on what their style is. I think Kentucky's still trying to figure out what they are, and that's Kentucky pretty much any year right now because of the freshmen that they have to bring in every year. They don't have to, but that they do. Florida, I'm curious about, because Florida I thought would be much better than they are right now. Tennessee is not going to be not going to challenge for the league title this year like they did last year. They're rebuilding anyway, but I think they've got even more questions now. I think this is going to be, and I know I'm forgetting somebody, but I think this is going to be a season where you're going to see a lot of ebb and flow in February, March. And I think if we were talking again at the SEC tournament in Nashville, we would say, well, I didn't see this team taking it over, this team making a run back in January, but it did. I don't know who that team is going to be, but it's going to be one of them. And the fact that Musselman's a first-year coach, it probably helps him out, because if you've got it rolling early on, there's going to be a belief there. And if you can get a belief in a team your first year as a coach, it's going to pay dividends, because the team's going to get better as the year goes on.
Adam Sparks covers Vanderbilt for the Tennessean. Really appreciate you hopping on with us this morning, man. Great stuff. Enjoy the game tonight, and I'm sure we'll be catching up with you later down the road. All right, my man?
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Hey, you as well, man. Appreciate it. It's funny when we talk about the SEC and bring that up. It's still a conference that's tough to figure out right now. But one team that's kind of shocked some people is LSU, sitting at 4-0 in this conference, 12-4 overall.
I have to have them in my top 4 right now.
Yeah.
And they have a win over Arkansas. I mean, Auburn at 1. I think I'd have to have Kentucky, Arkansas, LSU amongst my other 3 in that top 4 right now. I don't think I'm forgetting anybody else that belongs in that list.
No.
The winner, he's right. The winner of the Arkansas-Kentucky game gets the leg up, but Arkansas might right now today be 4th amongst those 4.
Hold on, say that again. Arkansas, if they beat Kentucky,
would have the leg up
on Kentucky? When was the last time that you could say that Arkansas has the leg up on Kentucky?
Just right now, you have to say LSU has to be ahead of Arkansas in any standings because, they beat beat Arkansas.
Right, and I understand that. I'm just saying that most of the time, even if Arkansas beat Kentucky, you're like, yeah, what? But they're still not better than Kentucky.
Yeah, but it's only one game.
Yeah, they're still not better than Kentucky. Well, it might be the case that if they beat Kentucky this year, they could be.
Well, they got three or four losses now, Kentucky.
Kentucky has three losses.
Three losses. All right.
So, I mean, they're still Kentucky. They're still going to be
good.
They're
still in the top 10.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, listen, they could lose 10 games this year and they'll still find a way to get a three seed. Just it's how it is, man, with Kentucky basketball.
Hey, do you own apartment complexes, condos, or other investment property? Those are great investments. Now make a great decision by calling our friends over at Trinity Multifamily to help you maximize your return. Trinity Multifamily offers full-service property management, marketing, leasing, sales, and all the services you need to make your cash flow. Hey, take the hassles and the frustrations out of ownership. Call Trinity Multifamily, 479-452-1817, or do it online at trinitymultifamily.com. Trinity Multifamily is your teammate in the real estate game.
Yeah, because I keep looking at these standings, and Georgia, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, and Ole Miss are all the four teams that have yet to win a conference game so far this year. Missouri, Mississippi State, Alabama are only having one conference win. So it's really tough. But I would guarantee right now that Arkansas finishes in the top five. Is that a bold guarantee that Arkansas in this conference at the end of the season is a top five SEC team?
Based on what we've seen, probably not. Tennessee's another team we got to throw in that mix. He mentioned Florida.
Tennessee, because Tennessee's sitting at 2-1. Florida's at 3-1.
Yeah. Tennessee's probably someone we left out. Florida's interesting.
Yeah.
Adam brings up a good point there.
They're kind of that team that I always just forget about. Now that Billy Donovan's gone and they got Mike White, they're just the most kind of like, yeah, they're still there. Oh, yeah, Florida. Forgot about them. They've just always been that kind of team. But LSU's got, and Will Wade's got them playing at a high level. They've had some pretty narrow wins, but wins nonetheless, because that's all that matters at the end of the day. But just from what I've seen, I still feel like Arkansas is a top five team in this conference. And if they continue to play like they have been and continue to grind out these wins and making clutch plays, because I'm telling you right now, Tommy, if they beat Vanderbilt tonight and then they beat Kentucky, I mean, the excitement level will be at a fever pitch, but also the rest of it when it comes to what Eric Musselman can do once he adds some more pieces into the puzzle for this team, is just at a next level as well. So, I mean, there's just a lot of things riding on not only this week of games, but just what the rest of the season is going to be holding. Arkansas, they can't afford to have a game like tonight where they have a letdown. They just can't afford to lose to teams like the Vanderbilts and the A&Ms and the teams like that have just not big on this conference. They can't have any bad losses. They've had so much momentum and so many good things going for them right now. They can't have any of these bad losses go for them against them as well.
Yeah, and because you're trying to build your resume, and like you said, these there are certain games that are, you get to a point, and you're not at the point of the year you can really classify a game as a must win, but I think this game tonight with where Vanderbilt's at is a can't lose. It's the opposite. You just can't lose it because, like you said, all your metrics take such a huge hit because you can't overcome it. I mean, you just can't erase it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a must win, it's just a can't lose.
I've heard that phrase before many a times.
I mean,
what you're doing with the Razorbacks.
It's just too damaging a loss.
Yeah. I just don't see in any way Eric Musselman does not have this team ready to go and has them overlooking.
That would be very surprising.
Yeah, just the way that things have gone so far this year.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.